We are back. This is Sources from the Sofa Sports Podcast. We have Jason, Aaron, and myself, Rome, back from Thanksgiving break. Hopefully everyone had a gobble-gobble good time, ate some turkey, got that stuffing, got the potatoes, that gravy, that grits, that mac, whatever you do for the holidays. I know it was a fun 5 days. Was it 5 days of football? Yeah, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. And it seemed like this weekend was brawl central. We had brawls in college football, brawls in the NFL, some crazy upsets. I wasn't even too excited about Thanksgiving football as me and Jason covered in the pod last week. But it ended up being a fun day and some great news from the Bears game. So we'll go over that later on. I'm sure Jason's excited to talk about Chicago Bears later on. I got some takes as well. Hallelujah, though. Hallelujah. Eberflus is gone.
It's what I was thankful for on Friday. So, Romy sent me a great text on that. Probably 11 months too late, but we'll get to it later in the podcast.
Yeah, 11 months too late. Why did they let him do the fucking press conference, though? Like, Jesus Christ.
Well,
like,
organization,
dude.
we'll get into that. I got some thoughts. So,
Just switch teams. Why are you putting yourself through this?
You mentioned it in a previous pod, you know, my incredible loyalty that I have for all things. So,
loyalty's overrated sometimes. Look at Kevin Garnett. He was happy when he went to the Celtics.
Yeah, but we'll stick it. But I got plenty of thoughts, especially that press conference really later. So I won't take up the entire first 45 minutes of the podcast. We'll wait till a little bit later.
Not for sure. We'll definitely get into it just because this was a lot of implications, playoff implications for college and the NFL. Let's start off with tonight's game, though. We're recording Monday night, right after Monday Night Football. Broncos 41, Browns 32. One of the most exciting Monday night games we've had in a while, I would say, is a fun shootout. Winston balled out. Those last two interceptions, you know, I can understand they were trying to catch up and you know, they were down by the deficit, but that pick six was not good. I don't know, thoughts on that game? Obviously, good win for the Broncos. I was hoping the Browns to kind of pull off the upset just to kind of rain on the Broncos parade a little bit, just because I'm not a big fan of their coach. But thoughts, guys, thoughts.
Yeah, well, you talked about Jameis Winston. Much of the social media chatter on Jameis was this is the vintage Jameis Winston performance.
That's fucking vintage, all right.
You know, 58 pass attempts, 497 yards, four
58?
Touchdowns. 58 pass attempts, 497 yards,
yet.
Four touchdowns, but three interceptions. One super costly at the end of the game for the pick six. Actually, had two pick sixes overall in the game. And then the one there is right at the end and under the last minute. So, but yeah, vintage Jameis performance. I mean, this is where, you know, the true gunslinger that is still around from the 90s for Aaron's Packers heyday with Brett Favre. This is what you're going to get, man. We'll go up
Favre.
And down the field, but the mistakes are going to be made.
Favre.
I mean, Jameis is just super entertaining, and you know, but the turnovers is why, you know, he hasn't stuck with a team and why Tampa didn't commit to him and he's kind of bumped around. But Jameis is a starting quarterback in this league, and he makes these games competitive. At least, you know, when you put the ball in his hand, at least the offense is somewhat entertaining. They get up and down the field, unlike some of these offenses in the NFL, which can barely move the ball. So I give him that, but a big win for Aaron's guy, Sean Payton, and the Broncos, you know, they look like they're locking in that, you know, seventh or sixth seed in the AFC, putting that kind of playoff race to bed there, and really at the top seven, pretty much almost locked in, just seeding at this point. So very entertaining Monday night game, like you said, Rome, but I think we're kind of locking in on what the AFC playoff picture is going to look like.
Yeah, to defend Jameis a little bit, they're probably letting him rip as well, you know, because their season's pretty much done, and they were down, you know, a couple scores, so I think they kind of gave the okay to do that, but not good though. Those interceptions were not good. It kind of looked a little Aaron Rodgers-esque when he just threw into the defender, and then, you know, what swung 14 points in that game. We'll talk about that, right, Aaron? Your boy A-Rod showing up.
I don't know what you're talking about, my boy, man. My boy's Jameis Winston from Florida State, man. Balling out, man. 497, like Jason said, three TDs, three interceptions, two pick sixes. But this is what Jameis does, man. I mean, he's a leader. He goes out there. He's gotten the Browns behind him. They've been competitive. They've been playing good. They've been playing hard since he's been in the lineup. Something
they look great.
Didn't see with Deshaun Watson. Maybe saving, you know, Kevin Stefanski's job there if he wants to stay there in Cleveland. But, yeah, I mean, the pick sixes, that comes with the territory. Given his, you know, the year he threw for over 5,000 yards, he threw for 30-plus touchdowns, 30 interceptions. This is what you're going to get from him. He's going to make some great throws. He's going to make some throws that leave you shaking your head. I mean, the pick six there.
That
was a great play. I mean, the wide receiver should have jumped out and made it, you know, at least touched him while he was on the ground. He didn't. He threw another pick six where the linebacker just made a great play, returned it to the house. And then that one at the end of the end zone was just bad. Time was running out. He tried to force something in there and that got intercepted by the linebacker. But, you know, Jameis missed the throw to Judy there. That could have led to a big touchdown there in the second quarter. But, you know, he's a guy that can throw for 5,000 yards. He can throw for 40 TDs, but he can give you 25 picks to a game on average, you know. So we'll see. I mean, it's not any worse than what Atlanta saw from Kirk Cousins on Sunday against the Chargers. Believe me, they probably would have liked famous Jameis in there for sure.
So something I kind of want to go, if you guys want to segue to the rest of the NFL, I want to do like this category, too good to be this bad. Too good to be this bad. I have a few started on this list.
Are we talking about teams or are we talking about ex-players?
It could be anything. It could be players or teams. Too good to be this bad. I got the Atlanta Falcons on there. Talented squad. Same thing with Kirk Cousins. That big contract starting to look. I don't know, man. Probably after this year, you're not going to see a lot of 38-plus year olds signing big contracts after the Achilles injury. Like I think this season kind of killed that for sure. The Chicago Bears is on that list. Lots of talent. We'll kind of go on that a little bit. But Jason, I kind of came around the corner a little bit whereas I still think like the playoffs were too high of an expectation there. I still think they should have a few more wins, you know, so we can talk about that Eberflus stuff again. Justin Tucker. Too good to be this bad. Did he lose his mojo? Honestly, like he's only missed like two extra free kicks. If you look at all the Ravens losses, I think they lost by a combined of 22 points. Guess how many points Tucker's misses equate to? 22 points. Aaron Rodgers, is he too good to be this bad? Is it just done with? Is he done? Is this the nail of the coffin? Is his career over? Who's going to take a chance on a grumpy 41-year-old ayahuasca, organization killer, I guess. Maybe we should send him to Chicago. I don't know. Just finish the job. Ryan Day. Too good to be this bad. My Wolverines, Aaron. Pulled out the big victory. Fuck your 6-win take for the season. We got to 7, baby. It was a hell of a weekend. I'm really excited about that. And then Georgia. 8 overtimes. They're too good to be that bad. I don't know. Some of their losses. But that's who I got in the category. I was kind of mixing both NFL and college football. Kind of want to see your guys' thoughts on any takes like that for the NFL this past weekend.
Yeah, I mean, Rodgers, he was too good to be this bad. I don't know if he's good anymore. And you talked about the Achilles and stuff like and when him coming off. I mean, overall, the Jets are, if you ask Jet fans, are a cursed franchise. So this was bound to happen.
I believe it now.
For the Jets. I mean, this is just what their fan base is thinking. Yeah, like the success they have has been very few and far between. And they had all this talent. And we kept saying, oh, it's a deep roster. They're a quarterback away. They get the quarterback. And the offense just hasn't been there, and Rodgers just hasn't looked great. And you said, yeah, who's going to take a risk on him? I don't know. I don't know if there's a team willing to take a risk on him, because you got a lot of teams that already got their quarterback situation lined up, you know, for the near future. And the couple teams that may need a quarterback, when you look at like the Raiders or a couple of these other teams, like, you know, there's a few QBs in the draft that you're probably going to take a risk on them before you're going to sign, you know, a big money contract to Aaron Rodgers. So it'd be very interesting. The Falcons, you know, that's another one. You know, we've been talking that all year, the talent they had. You know, is it the time now with Cousins that you need to see what you have with Michael Penix here? Because if they can't get things together and Cousins isn't going to get it done, does Penix need to get a shot? Because you've seen Bo Nix step up. Caleb Williams has obviously been better the last couple of games. You know, Jaden Daniels has been good throughout the year. So Penix is one of the kind of the missing guys in that first round QB class. You know, is he going to give them some extra juice offensively that Cousins isn't provided after, you know, the turnover game he had? So Ryan Day, man, I guess I don't know if he's good. You know, he wins a lot of games, but I don't, the big games is what's haunting him right now. Has he beaten Michigan yet? Because this is four straight Michigan,
right? His first
right?
game. 1-4 is 1-4.
1-4. 1-4. So 1-4 against Michigan. I think in Ohio State, that's a fireable offense alone. They could probably not be good, but just losing to Michigan as much as he's lost. And, you know, I don't like the odds of this team in the playoff at this point either, the way they've played. So
really?
I mean, we'll get into that. It's going to be, okay. It'll be a heck of a shuffle for that, but
sounds good.
Yeah. I don't know if he's good. I mean, I had friends texting me that they wished Ryan Day upon me to be the head coach of the Chicago Bears this weekend. So,
hey, I've been hearing rumblings about that.
Nah, I haven't heard Ryan Day as much as Marcus Freeman has been the name out there too, that they've been talking to, and the Bears would do that. They'd just ruin both of my teams, but I don't know. It's a good list, Rome. Justin Tucker, man, like I had a conversation with a couple of my buddies today. Like, do the Ravens cut Justin Tucker? You know, this guy was the most accurate kicker in history. I don't think they will. You have too much history.
I don't think so.
You have too much history with this guy. He's almost kind of like a pillar and face of this era of the Ravens. But man, like when you feel uneasy about your kicker going into the playoffs, you know, this is what it always comes down to. It's going to be a field goal to decide a game. And you have this kind of leading indicator that there's a field goal going to be missed and he's going to do it. And that's what it's going to come down to in the playoffs. There'll be a field goal ways. Is it a field goal to send the Ravens to the Super Bowl in the snow against the Bills and Tucker can't make the field goal? Like, that's what you're kind of leading to. So, man, just a lot of question marks there where this guy was the most accurate kicker in NFL history. And now he is having, you know, the worst year of his career. And now it becomes not the lock that the Ravens had in their back pocket for a special teams player.
Yeah, I mean, to touch base, Aaron Rodgers, yeah, I think he's done. You know, happy birthday to you too, brother.
Happy birthday, man. Yeah.
But, yeah, I think you got to stick a fork in him. I mean, I don't see anybody signing him. I don't see him being a backup. You know, I've heard rumors maybe he sits out, a quarterback gets hurt, and then he comes in, you know, midseason next year. Maybe, you know, try to fill in for a few games. We'll see. You know, the Achilles, he hasn't looked good. I mean, he looked a little more mobile on Sunday against Seattle coming off a bye.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, his accuracy wasn't great. Missed some throws, hit a few throws, wide receivers. The Jets as an organization is a mess. It's just been a mess from the start.
His post game was pretty interesting. He was really, really careful with his wording and didn't really take any accountability again. And he blamed the wind, I think, for not completing that pass. Who was wide open?
And was that Garrett Wilson?
I think it was Garrett Wilson. Yeah, he blamed the wind.
That was a bad throw.
And then he's like, you know, there's 11 other guys, so there's other mistakes that's happened. So he's just like kind of distributing the blame around.
I mean, he's right. I mean, it is a team game. I mean, the quarterback, you know, gets the most out of wins, and then if you lose, I mean, the defense there has been poor. It's been bad. That's been one thing for sure. Ryan Day, yeah, he's 1-4 against Michigan. He's lost four straight, but 47-1 against everybody else in the Big Ten.
47-1 against everyone else, yeah.
We question whether or not he can coach or not, but I will say this about Ohio State. I guess we'll touch more on it when we get into the playoff and stuff. Every time they've had a bad loss, they've bounced back with a big win or showed up the next game.
Yeah.
Remember, they lost to Michigan, got in the playoff, had Georgia beat. Marvin Harrison Jr. goes out with a concussion. They end up losing that game. Georgia comes back and beats them 43-42. If he doesn't get that concussion, they go on to win that game, maybe go on to win the national title. So I think Ryan Day in Ohio State has responded after losses to Michigan, especially embarrassing games. He does have that going for him. I did see one tweet from an ex-player that Ryan Day needs to go because last time they were losing in a game, instead of talking to the team, he just went in and started yelling at coaches. So, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, his record, he wins. They got great talent. They get to the playoff. We'll see what happens. They're going to be in the playoff. So they got that going for them. Justin Tucker, I'm not ready to cut him. I think the bye week is great for Baltimore. I think Justin Tucker said it best. He's going to work on mechanics, get this thing figured out. If after the bye, this continues, you got to think about either cutting him or maybe just coming up with a fluke injury and pinning him on the IR. And you know,
what's like the percentage that's acceptable for a kicker? Like, what's the?
I mean, he was the all-time leading kicker. I think he was at 90+%.
He was, and then 90.9.
I think he came in this year. He's missed 10 kicks this year.
He's kicking 70%.
Yeah, I think he's sub 89% now. So, which is like Eddie Pinheiro, the Panthers kicker, is now the most accurate kicker in NFL history. So,
and he missed 2 kicks on Sunday.
Yeah.
So
it's been a weird year for kickers. I think overall, there's been a lot of what you would consider layup stuff, like within the 50, you know, within 50 that these kickers are missing. But at the same time, you know, they're bombing out stuff from high 50s, low 60s.
It's so weird. They're making 50s. They're spotting quarters, but they're biting apples or like onions, you know, like that Seinfeld thing. Kind of weird.
Well, I mean, ask Ohio State about the kicking game. I mean, their kicker missed 2 easy kicks, you know, what, a 34-yarder and what, another 40-yarder. I mean, those are kicks you got to make.
Michigan's kicker came in clutch, dude.
Yeah, he's going to make some money on Sundays for sure.
Oh, for
that guy.
Sure, yeah. He came in big balls. I thought it'd be kind of fun just talking about, like, too good to be this bad. Nothing else pops in my head. I just thought maybe you guys might want to add to that, but... Dolphins?
Nah, I don't... Dolphins, the Tua thing, I don't really buy into that. I mean, they're too good to be that bad in cold weather.
How about
Cardinals? I will say that. They look terrible in cold weather.
Well, that's terrible, yeah.
Yeah, to finish up with the Dolphins, you know, the Tua thing's the big mark, and I think for them, you know, they got to come out hot at the beginning of the year if they are going to be this questionable team in cold weather. But the defense just hasn't been as good as it was probably like a year and a half ago. And then the offense at the same time has not been nearly as good. You know, Tyreek maybe potentially like missing a step here at a certain point that wasn't as dynamic. I know there was a knee thing, you know, earlier in the year that they talked about. So, you know, all the questions around Tua, you know, is he the guy in Miami? Well, at this point, he's the only guy. And he's the one keeping the team together for the most part because they're dreadful without him. So he, you know, seemed to be worth that, the investment they had. The Cardinals, you mentioned, I don't think so because the Cardinals are right in the mix. I'd have to go back to the record, but I'm pretty sure Aaron and I both have the Cardinals at the bottom of the NFC West in our preseason predictions. You know, the other three teams were you know, especially the both of you guys were high on the Seahawks. I was high on the Niners. The Rams were kind of in a semi-rebuilding mode. The Cardinals had some pieces, but, you know, weren't there. I think the Cardinals, I don't want to say they're a year ahead, but considering how bad the division is and they're in the hunt for the division title, I think they're right around where they should be. And probably, you know, just since the division regressed to them, you know, they're looking better than they probably should have.
How about the 49ers then? Too good to be this bad. Lots of Pro Bowls.
A lot of injuries for them, but at the same time, their window is probably closed right now.
You think so? You
know, man, you got an aging McCaffrey, which I don't know what's going on with, you know, the Achilles or the PCL, I think is what he hurt now, done for the year. Trent Williams, I think he's 37 years old. You know, he's getting up there from a tackle perspective. You know, Debo's getting older. I think he's 32 as well, so he's probably gone here. Ayuk's the only, I think, young part of that core, but he tore his ACL this year. They're going to have to pay Purdy soon, and paying him is going to, you know, limit the amount of financial flexibility to get a bunch of dynamic playmakers. So, I mean, the window is super tight. Can they come back and next year with that? This was kind of like their winning window. And last year they had all the health. They were like super healthy, which I think was the disappointment that, hey, they couldn't maximize that team and really go to the Super Bowl last year. Now they have none of the health and they're gone.
No health, but I just think it's just one of those down years, right? NFL, they've been so healthy the last 2 years, and I think they'll just retool here and there. I don't think it's a full rebuild. I don't think that's necessary. I don't think it's completely closed. It's just a bad year.
The problem, you
but
know,
they should
when
be
you
playing
go,
better than this.
They should be. There's some definite wins at the beginning of the year that they probably, in hindsight, would have put them in better position now. But you go in cycles of the NFL, and you know you could say it's a rebuilding year, but there's a lot to how deep the Niners have been because they've had a quarterback that makes like $800,000 a year. Eventually, they're going to have to pay somebody here, and they're not going to be able to invest as much money in other sides of the ball, and it's going to be a different team. And how is you know, potential if Kyle Shanahan's still there. He should be. But I know there's a lot of spoiled, unhappy 49er fans that are calling for his job. Those also might be Bears fans that are trolling and saying, yeah, they really should fire, as a diehard 49ers fan, they should really fire Kyle Shanahan. So, and he should have to be sentenced to be the Bears head coach.
Yeah, I think Lynch and Shanahan they're going to be sticking around. I mean, the 49ers, what are they 5-7 right now? They gave away three games. They gave away against the Rams. They gave a game away against Seattle.
And
they gave away that game against the Cardinals.
Yeah.
So they gave away three games that they probably at one point or not had an 80% or more higher probability of winning. They've lost a ton of players. I think there was a stat yesterday that they've had their Pro Bowlers have missed a combined 34 games, the most of any team. They've always done a good job of drafting guys late, second, third, fourth round, and picking up depth. I mean, they still got depth, but their D-line is shot. They don't blitz, so they rely on the pass rush. Now you're about a top five pass rusher, Nick Bosa, out. They can't get to the quarterback. And then they got another corner that's out, a safety that's out. Their linebackers are kind of old and slow. Fred Warner's basically playing on one leg. So, and then, you know, Trent Williams, like Jason mentioned, he's 37. He's still real productive, but once you get that age, you're not going to be around for 17 games. Those guys typically start playing 12, 13 games. The interior of their offensive line is banged up. And, you know, at Debo's had a terrible year. Kittle, are they going to pay him? He's an aging tight end, probably going to let him go. So they got nice running backs, but Mason, he's on the IR now. So now you're down to your third and fourth string running backs. And their schedule's just been brutal. They've had a tough schedule. I mean, a real tough schedule. I mean, you got Kansas City. They played Buffalo, Green Bay late in the season right here on the road. I believe they still got Detroit.
Still got Detroit. They got Miami.
Chicago.
Yep.
I mean,
this weekend.
So
their
schedule's been brutal. I mean, the 49ers has their window closed. I don't necessarily want to say that because that division to me is still winnable every year. And if they were healthy and closed out a couple of these games, they'd be winning it right now.
Still stacked, yeah.
But as far as them dominating the NFC and going 13-4 or 14-3, those days are likely over with this roster. They're probably looking at more like an 11-6 team if they're fully healthy and functioning on all levels.
Cool. Let's recap real quick. We got Thanksgiving games. Which one was the first game?
Bears Lions.
It was Bears Lions. That was the first game.
Yep.
Let's talk about that game last. Giants and Cowboys is actually pretty entertaining. Cowboys back to back wins, 27-21. If you guys watched that, Packs demolishing Dolphins. Dolphins couldn't play at all in the cold. Aaron, your second quote unquote second best team in the NFC. You're still holding the pack to that.
No, I've jumped the Eagles ahead.
Nice.
I've watched the Eagles the last 3 weeks. I've moved them slightly ahead, but if they do play in the playoffs, LaFleur will have a good game plan. It'll be a good game.
Eagles look great, man. They look phenomenal. They're a great fourth quarter team. Saquon Barkley, Kellen Moore, the game plan he's put together, they look really unstoppable. They're a little slow coming out of the gate, but them playing the Ravens and just shutting them down like that, they have to be really strong favorites at this point now. Number one, number two, maybe the some people were saying they might be the second best NFL team right now.
You could argue them being the best.
Would you say that?
I think you can. I mean, especially in the NFC, like the Lions have been great, but I mean, you saw in the second half of the Chicago game, like there was some stoppability, you know, of the offense possible. I think Jared Goff, as much progress he's made under Ben Johnson, there are glimpses of the Jared Goff that was with
still
the Rams.
No love for Goff from you, huh?
Nah.
He's in my MVP list.
Nah.
And there's no love from you.
There's no love from me. Jared Goff's always going to be the guy that played the Bears in Soldier Field at like a 13-10 game or something like that. That was just brutal offensively and just, you know, and was it a 13-3 Super Bowl against the Patriots and stuff like that? That's Jared Goff in my mind. But yeah, I think there's an argument for the Eagles being the best team in the NFC and best team in football. Aaron, I wanted your thoughts, though, just as much we've talked about the impact of Saquon and Derrick Henry in those offenses. Saquon right now, is he a top three MVP candidate?
He is the MVP candidate. I said it 2 weeks ago. He was my MVP candidate. I stand by that.
Yeah, I listed him
again,
as one of my guys.
Big runs again in the fourth quarter. He gets that team going. That's the thing with the Eagles, Rome, you said it. They start slow, but that big O-line just wears on you. And Saquon in the second half, especially fourth quarter, they just bust off runs. And once he gets there to the second level, he's gone. That was a close game. You could argue if Tucker had made a few kicks that the game could have gone maybe differently. But he busted a big run there, gave him that cushion, and it was 14-12 to go up 21-12, and that was the ball game.
The big thing for me, Jalen Hurts has been playing close to mistake-free football.
No turnovers.
This past game, only 11 of 19, 118 yards, a touchdown. They've been going run first, pass second. They've just been killing it, man. They looked really fucking good against Baltimore.
Yeah, and I agree with there, and I was kind of lobbing up a question which I knew the answer to, because I think we've been hyping Saquon up all year on the pod, because I he's been that impactful for a team that was just trying to pass all year with Jalen last year. You know, now having to be able to lean on Saquon and really be in the running back that, you know, he was coming out of Penn State that the Giants, I think, just never got the most out of. Now he's behind an offensive line that really, you know, is able to highlight what he can do. Now, I would have put him ahead first in the MVP until I watched the Sunday night game. Now, I don't know if it's not why am I drawing a blank right now?
Josh Allen?
Josh Allen's to lose at this point because, you know, if you're able to throw and catch a touchdown in the same pass
and,
of your own stuff. And
rush.
Yeah, and rush. I mean, he's having the year that we said he would needed to have without the weapons that he had with Diggs and things like before. And it is now 100% Josh Allen elevating his game. So I think if the Bills are able to really push it here in this last month of football, potentially get the number one seed in the AFC, I think Josh Allen wins the MVP.
I mean, yeah, it's a real close call. We came into the season. I know me and Jason were low on Buffalo because we just weren't sure how great Josh Allen was with the weapons, with Diggs and everybody being gone. Only one wide receiver returning in Shakur and a bunch of essentially no names. They had Kincaid, a tight end, and Knox. But Knox has kind of dipped down in production. I think I talked to you, Roman. I mean, Josh Allen's the best quarterback in the NFL. People could say about Mahomes and whatnot. Josh Allen's the best quarterback in the National Football League. He just doesn't have the rings yet. Can he beat Mahomes in the playoffs? We're going to find out. You could argue that, you know, the defense has let him down. Terrible coaching decisions there with that 13 seconds left in the game that maybe, well, you know, Buffalo may and McDermott may never let down. But Josh Allen does some special things, what he's doing with Buffalo right now. And they're beating up bad teams. They're blowing bad teams out. And they're beating teams that are average to good. They're beating them bad. They're not escaping week to week like somebody else in the AFC who's got, you know, 14 straight one-score victories. So Allen, as Jason mentioned, if they get the one seed, it's a possibility he gets the MVP. You know, it's going to be tough, man. But, you know, Saquon, Philly, they're rolling right now. I don't believe the NFL's ever had co-MVPs. I don't know if they'll be like quarterback of the year.
There has been. It's been about like almost a decade. Remember, there used to be like several. It was the AP and also Sporting News. They used to do split MVPs pretty often. I think it was Sean Alexander.
I thought Peyton Manning and Steve McNair or something was one year they were co-MVPs.
Might have been that or Sean Alexander and somebody else. Yeah. It's been a while, but yeah, I've been a big fan of Josh Allen, been pretty vocal about it. But for him, I think it's all his to lose at this point. He just has more touches. Has he having a great year? There was addition with subtraction, you know, with Diggs getting out there. He looks relaxed. He's not worried about, you know, feeding his diva, you know, wide receiver. Everyone's playing good ball. You got fun, engaging rookies. The team environment, you got Bills Mafia shoveling snow, jumping, you know, half naked, throwing a, I don't know if you guys saw this replay, someone was throwing a snowball trying to hit the 49ers field goal attempt out of the goalpost, man. That was fucking hilarious. But Saquon though definitely needs his flowers for sure.
But yeah, I mean, give a lot of credit to Buffalo and McDermott, and give a lot of credit for Joe Brady, the OC.
Oh, big time.
You know, he hasn't, you know, Matt Rhule in Carolina gave up on this guy after a year and a half into his tenure. Who knows what they could have been if they'd kept him. Matt Rhule maybe could still be there coaching at Carolina. I know you're probably happy he's there at Nebraska right now, Rome.
Well, but, not the way they show up on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, but Joe Brady's done a great job there. He turned LSU, Joe Burrow, that team into a powerhouse that one season. He's going to be a guy, if not this year, in the next few years, working under Josh Allen, that's going to get a head coaching job in the NFL.
Well, if you remember, the Bills kind of had like a rebuilding on the offensive side when what's-his-face took the job with the Giants, right?
Dable.
So
then they fired Dorsey.
Yeah. So
he's now calling plays for Cleveland now.
Doing better with Jameis, I guess, right?
Yeah. Well, I think he just took over play calling maybe 5-6 weeks ago because Stefanski gave that up.
Which is when they opened up the playbook, yeah. Big games, big wins this weekend, guys. Who do you think had the biggest wins?
I would say your Steelers versus the Bengals. I know the Bengals haven't had, you know, the record and they've been underwhelming all year, but you know, the Bengals are coming out to play offensively, and I think in that game you saw what you wanted to see out of Russell Wilson. Is
can surprised he get
the ball up and down the field, and you know, 44 points scored by the Steelers. I don't know the last time they scored that many points.
This was the 82 points that they scored the most points in an NFL game this year, the most in this storied rivalry. Typically these are like 20, you know, low 20 games. Joe Burrow had 300 yards, three touchdowns. Russell Wilson, 400 yards, three touchdowns, both had interceptions. George Pickens picking fights with everybody else per usual, which is fucking hilarious. Jamar Chase balled. I really feel bad for Joe Burrow because this guy's putting up like historic Brady-like numbers and got nothing to show for it. But I feel like we've seen this before, man. Like I've been getting weird Carson Palmer vibes, you know, from the season. Is this like the who's like the most cursed franchise at this point? You know, getting good players or fucking them over. Is it the Bengals? Is it the Bears? Is it the Jets?
You can't put the Bengals in there. Just got to a Super Bowl, man, a few years ago. And an AFC championship game. I mean, the Bears can't even get out of their own way. It's the same with the Jets.
Yeah, I would say if you went back to our childhood, and if you're talking the 90s Bengals, they were definitely up there. You know, when they're drafting Aaron's guy, Peter Warwick. In that kind of time frame, the Bengals were probably just the bottom feeders of the league. But, you know, I think starting in the Marvin Lewis era, you know, they've been the third best team in that division. But they've been within striking distance of the playoffs, you know, year in, year out. Some seasons up, some seasons down. But you mentioned it. You talked about Carson Palmer. They've had a string of really good quarterbacks. They've had Carson Palmer. You know, say what you want about Andy Dalton, but he was a very productive starter for that team, paired with AJ Green for a long time.
And forgot now Joe, to be honest with you, you're absolutely right.
And now Joe Burrow. So like as a Bears fan, or if you're talking a Jets fan, or you know, some of these other franchises, like they've had a franchise quarterback every single time that has been their quarterback for the better part of a decade at this, you know.
So how long was the Red Rocket there?
Shit, seems like almost 8-10 years. He was there a while.
Was he?
Yeah.
Interesting. We gotta look that up. Yeah, Steelers, though, by the way, I really like that one. I was pretty excited. Shootout. I saw the first half, and it was pretty close, but then I switched over the four games. I kind of wanted to catch a little bit of the Seattle-Carolina game. I wanted to see the Jets game because that was really close as well. I was trying to see whether A-Rod's gonna pull the rabbit out of the hat. But Steelers, man, 9-3, two-game lead in the AFC. Tough schedule remaining. But man, I just wanted to play 500 ball. This was a big win. They're right on target to play 500 ball the rest of the way. Hopefully the Chiefs were so close to getting upset by the Raiders. Like so many games, and they just the refs, the poor spotting at the end of the game, more flags that didn't need to be thrown. Like I've never seen this before. Like I feel like this is even worse than what Brady had. Am I tripping out?
I think you're tripping out. I think it's a combination of flags along with the one-score games that's everyone given there for the Chiefs. But I will say for the Chiefs, they have a rough road ahead to end the season. So I think, Rome, you might get your wish. They got the Chargers coming up. You know that's going to be a tight game. Chargers have been very good this season. That's not an easy win.
A little banged up, though.
A little bit, but still. I mean, the Chargers have played everyone very close. So that's going to be a close game. It's a different Chargers team, you know, that you know, potentially in the fourth quarter, come out with a victory. So that's a tough game. Then they got Cleveland. That may be their easiest game, but you got Jameis. You know, if he could do something offensively and not and it's not a turnover game, that becomes a very difficult game in Cleveland for the Chiefs as well.
Hopefully it snows.
It could. You got Houston. They haven't been as good this year, but still a lot of potential on that team. Then you got your Steelers in Pittsburgh on Christmas Day. That's a really hard game. And then they end the year at Denver. So, you know, there's a lot of potential losses here for the Steelers, or I'm sorry, for the Chiefs down the stretch. So I Rome, I think you get your wish, and maybe your Power Eight rankings, Rome's top eight, you know, and you ranking them, you know, seventh or eighth the entire year probably
Rome,
will be correct.
Rome was ready to drop him out of the loss against the Raiders. He like had him penciled in at like number 11, and they won that game. He's like, fuck, I got to keep him in the top eight.
One thing about the Raiders, I know you guys have been going against them for like the past few weeks, but I'd be like, you know what? Like, I've been watching some, you know, just little pieces here and there. They are playing tough, and Bowers, he's just a generational tight end talent. Pierce, I'm not sold that he's the coach, but at least they're playing for him like the past few weeks. They look like pretty tough. They're a tough out. I don't know if he keeps his job. I think they should probably get somebody else, but the Raiders, for what it's worth, they've been pretty competitive. You know, using the shit out of Bowers. So it was really close, man. I was really sad that they couldn't pull it out. Other big wins.
You guys mentioned the Steelers. I'm going to go with the Eagles going into Baltimore and winning.
That's big.
That's a big win. They go in as an underdog, and they looked every much the part. You know, the Lions, they're in a dogfight. I mean, the Lions are a team that could either get the one seed or possibly drop all the way down to the five, depending on what happens there in Minnesota and even Green Bay.
They could be the six.
Yeah. So, I mean, they've been steamrolling people. They've won a couple Colts games themselves here, Houston and the Bears here on Thanksgiving Day. But Philly's basically locked in as a two. So,
it's very nice doing a hell of a job. They're looking really nice.
I know in 2 weeks, I think it's going to be a dogfight. It's a game I'm really curious to see when Pittsburgh and Philly play, because Pittsburgh's better than Kansas City. They're going to beat Kansas City there on Christmas Day. I'm going to call it now. Just get it out of the way, mark it down, guarantee it. Pittsburgh will beat the Chiefs on Christmas Day, and possibly with that schedule, get into that two seed, and you could have the Chiefs dropping all the way down to three, and Buffalo being the top seed, and you could be looking at a, you know, Buffalo-Pittsburgh playoff matchup, AFC championship game.
I wouldn't enjoy that at all. I'd be real quick, besides the Steelers-Bills, I thought that was really big. This is the earliest the team has clinched the division since the Patriots in that undefeated 16-0 year. They did it in Week 11. Bills had a chance to clinch it this year in Week 11, but the Dolphins went on like a little two-game winning streak to kind of fuck that thing up, but they finally get it. Week 13, man, that's early as hell, which is pretty impressive. I thought that was a big win. Vikings, lucky to get out of that. They've had like a lot of close nail biters against the Cards. Jason, me and you were talking about this last week. Like, I didn't know what the hell Murray was going to do.
Kyle Murphy, man.
Hey, I still yet to know what Kyle Murphy's going to do, dude.
I just didn't know what to expect, and like, bam, they fucking shut up and almost had a chance to win. Seahawks, that was giving it to them. Colts, big win for them, right?
Yeah, I mean, it keeps them two games out of a wild card and two games out of the division, so it keeps things interesting, at least in that conference and maybe last wild card spot.
Yeah, and then the Lions, let's just talk about that game because that was a big win for them. It kind of keeps them ahead of the pack. They got the Eagles soaring high, flying right behind them. They should have probably lost this game against the Bears. 23-20 on Thanksgiving. Had everyone screaming at their TVs. I know I was screaming at the TV. Call the fucking timeout. Call the fucking timeout. Run a play. Call a timeout. Do one of those two things. And then we all saw together in unison as a nation, like those seconds ticking away, ticking away, ticking away. Caleb Williams looking around. What the fuck's happening? Looked like he was waiting for a call. We end up finding out that he was waiting for a play to be sent to him. All of a sudden, you know, they get set. 6 seconds left. They audible play. They have Rome going across the field to the right side. near the end zone. The ball was thrown a little bit short, and time ended, and Eberflus looked dumbfounded as fuck. Like, what the fuck? Like, no one called a timeout. He looked fucking lost. Let's talk about that game, because honestly, I know you guys mentioned some other games, like, oh, this is the game that you get fired for. This was the game you get fired for. And even the CBS crew, you had remind me.
Yeah, Matt Ryan talking
Matt
about
Ryan,
it.
Matt Ryan,
Bill
Nate,
Cowher.
Bill Cowher especially. They're like, dude, Eberflus, this is like his second or third brain fart at the end of the game where he didn't run a play or called a timeout. It was a complete disaster. You know, Caleb got some blame. He should have called timeout. Does he not have permission to call timeout? You know, I know things are hectic, right? The clock's ticking, so all that stuff can be pretty confusing. But that play, that end of the game, Bears should have won. They came back roaring back in the second half, and that was the only coffin for Eberflus. They led him to the press conference, though, after they met with him in the morning. He was talking about facing the 49ers the following week, and then an hour later, he gets fired. We all find out together. Like, fucking bizarre, man. But Jason, you must be really happy. I know a lot of Chicago Bears fans are happy. They're like, yeah, 11 months too late. Maybe 11 games too late. But it's finally happened. Now the question is, does Pohl stay there? Should he stay there? Give us a breakdown.
I think going back to the game, it feels like this game was a month ago for all the news that has happened since
that game. It
feels
like a month ago.
So much has happened since that game. Yeah, it was definitely the nail in the coffin, as you said. I think I don't think this was the absolute. I think he could have been fired after the New England game, frankly, for how poorly they were, you know, prepared for that. And, you know, not even talking about the Cardinals game that I went to Phoenix or to Glendale and to sit through as well, too.
That was
and then
bad.
Three straight division games that all were within the Bears' grasp: the blocked field goal versus the Packers, you know, storming back versus the Vikings and messing that up in overtime after everything did Caleb to get him back in the game.
And obviously
this game. So your three division rivals who are all fantastic teams, you know, they're all playoff tops of the NFC. You are playing with all of these teams. So you are in the conversation and have the competitive roster to win these games, and you blow all three of them. And this one, yeah, like you said, the nation was looking on, what are you doing? You know, I guess in his mind is, I needed the timeout for if they get the ball in bounds on fourth down, they could attempt the field goal. But on the flip side, and every analyst said this, was you call timeout right after the sack, you get your team together, you call the first play, and then there's enough time to get the field goal unit to run onto the field and kick the field goal. So that being said, obviously it was terrible. Everyone's talking about it. You know, the on to the next portion of it, which was, you know, Friday morning, you mentioned, yeah, Eberflus does the press conference, and then not more than 2 hours later, it's sent that he's been dismissed as head coach of the Chicago Bears. So why are you trotting out the head coach? I was looking on X for Chicago beat reporters and stuff like that. Basically, like, I think it's 9 o'clock our time, so it's like 11 o'clock central. This is the time it goes. And it's like 9:03, 9:04. They haven't logged on to the call yet. The reporters haven't got the link. And then all of a sudden he's on there because they thought, okay, maybe he's getting dismissed because, you know, he's late. Well, he comes on, he talks, you know, talks to the press conference. It was super awkward. And then he gets dismissed. So that leads us to today. Kevin Warren, the Bears president, and Ryan Poles, the GM, they had their press conference with the media. Warren did say that Poles is staying on in the GM for the future, which I agree is the right decision, because the roster that has been assembled was Ryan Poles. So this is a roster that should be in the playoffs. You know, we can argue about that, but they are competitive against playoff teams. And we're talking about head coaching decisions and preparation and, you know, whether it's coordinator hires or other portions of that was to the head coach's job. That's been, you know, the downfall of the Bears so far this season. So I think Poles is the right man for the job right now. Now, Poles has had three huge mistakes as GM. Number one was the trade with your Steelers for Chase Claypool for a second round pick.
I think that was great.
I don't think he'll ever live that one down. So that was strike one. But hey, he went big and flashy. Didn't know what was going to happen at the time. Needed a receiver, but obviously a huge bust of a trade. The second was signing Nate Davis as a guard in free agency, who the Bears cut, I think, last week. So a guy who is supposed to be fixing your offensive line in the interior, they've cut. The third, to me, was him not firing Eberflus last year. Now, I'll give him a pass on this only because I know the history of the Bears organization, and sometimes they're rather on the cheap, and they're about loyalty and being, you know, nice and having continuity and all this type of stuff. So I think that was a decision from the ownership down why he wasn't able to fire Eberflus. So I'll give him a pass on that. But now it's about finding the next head coach. And there's a lot of conversation about who the final decision maker is. And that was part of the press conference today. Kevin Warren says Poles is the point man for it. And he's basically making the call, but Warren's going to be involved in the conversation, which I think he should be. Warren wasn't around for the hiring of Eberflus. So what I don't want is I don't want any sort of search committee or any like that being a part of that, because the two of the Bears' biggest fumbles in head coaching, and they've had a lot of them since they fired Lovie Smith. I had a previous pod where I ranted about since the McCaskies fired Lovie Smith after a 10-6 season, they've had this litany of bad coaches. Two of them, they have hired outside help for this. The first one was when, after they dismissed Mark Trestman, they brought in Ernie Accorsi, the former Giants GM, to help with the search there. Well, he hired his friend of, 30 years, John Fox, 4 days after he was fired from the Broncos, and he had a, utterly dreadful tenure for the Bears.
I did not like that hire. I remember that.
No, terrible hire. So you bring in this guy, who's his friend, probably. This is a guy he's got experience. Terrible hire was there. Then they brought in Nagy. They didn't need the outside firm or anything higher from that, but then they dismissed Nagy. Now, when they hired Eberflus, they brought in Bill Polian for that one, and they had, a DE&I, chair or a VP for the Bears. Somebody else was a 5-person committee, and it was this whole thing to hire Eberflus. And I think I called this out to you guys before, but it was mine and plenty of Bears fans and critics, is that they narrowed down the Bears coaching search to 3 head candidates before Ryan Poles was hired. So Poles only got to pick from a pool of 3 guys, and Eberflus was the guy. But this is what the search committee did. So I want to give Ryan Poles and say, hey, you have the open market now. You get to hire the coach you want. So this is the biggest decision probably in Bears football.
I read
in
somewhere,
the West,
though, that Ryan Poles was the sole person that did second and third round interviews for the coaching when he finally hired Eberflus.
He did for the 3. So he picked out of a group of 3. To me, you're narrowing my options to start. I don't get to choose who I want to lead that organization.
Who are the other 2 options, by the way? Do you remember those? Or do you have that?
Man, I don't remember who it was. I think it was Jim Caldwell was one of them.
Oh, no.
Because it was another of the things that, and it's been very popular in Bears Twitter right now, is the next head coach is going to be a leader of men.
That's what they're saying. That's what they're saying.
That's the thing in the leader of men comment to talk about that. And the last time, I actually have this tweet I found. It was from Booger McFarlane on December 31st in 2018. Chris Richard, Matt Eberflus, Jim Caldwell, leaders of men, teachers, clear vision and focus, 3 to keep your eye on. So these were the leader of men conversation years ago where it wasn't there. The Bears need to not overthink this, but they definitely will. Ben Johnson's the hire. It's who I've talked about forever, to many Bears fans and analysts. He's the number one head coaching candidate in the pool right now. He needs to get hired. Mike Vrabel, that's the trendy name that's going around because he's apparently, the leader of men as well, too.
That would be a leader of men.
True. But I'll give it for this Mike Vrabel. Mike Vrabel, not as good once Arthur Smith wasn't his offensive coordinator. So, the shtick on, I can lead these guys here, goes out the window when you can't put a good offensive and defensive product out in the field at the same time, too. So the other thing, Aaron mentioned Brady from the Bills. Don't want him either. As much as the resume you're bringing up, to me, this is the Josh Allen effect. All right. I don't want Matt Nagy 2.0 where I get the rub because I had Patrick Mahomes. For me, Ben Johnson has proven that he's able to do an offense with a guy that is not the top tier talent at QB with Jared Goff and build an offense. And he has been the sole architect of that offense. And that's what's proven to me. So that's what I want in the head coach. But I will tell you, they probably won't hire Ben Johnson, and I'm going to be unhappy with the hire. And this is the biggest turning point for the Bears organization probably in 20-plus years.
So leader of men, I think everyone's looking at Detroit for that kind of coach, right? Just getting everyone to go to war for Mike Tomlin, he's the leader, man. That offense has not been great either for a few years, but, you know, he's always trying to tool around and stuff like that. I think they're just looking for someone that can actually just have the balls and have everyone unite behind them. He's not going to second guess themselves. Even Tomlin doesn't make great decisions all the time. But when you're talking about leader man like that, though, Vrabel sounds really nice. I wouldn't want him to go to the Bears. That sounds like a really good hire to me.
Yeah, I mean, Mike Vrabel sounds like a good... I mean, Ben Johnson's the guy. He's the hot name.
He's a hot
you
name,
see,
but...
You see what he does on offense.
How often does to a hot me, name actually become a great head coach, though? It's not a good track record.
Yeah, I mean, but, I mean, he's doing things with Jared Goff. I mean, the Bears have similar weapons and would have a more mobile quarterback, and Caleb Williams' upside's greater than Jared Goff's. The question is, if the Giants, the Jets, are they going to write a, you know, give him a blank check and say, hey, Bears are cheap. They're not going to pay you. We're going to pay you as a first-time coach, you know, 12, 14, 15 million. Similar to what the Panthers did with Matt Rhule, bringing him from college. They basically gave him a ton of money, and everybody was like, hey, what are you guys doing? You know, we gave him $75 million for like 60-year deal.
That was a lot.
For the Bears, talking about leader and men, I doubt they'll go this route. I mean, Ben Johnson would probably be the guy, if you can get him, I'd go with, but you need to bring in a guy that brings some stability, and Bill Belichick's the guy. Bring him in. You already got a great defense. It can help him about that. And you got to get a great OC and a guy that can go in. Fundamentals will be much more better there. They'll be much more disciplined. They've got the talent. Those three guys, Rabel, Belichick, and Johnson, would be the top three candidates on my list. Any one of those three, I think, would be great for Chicago to hire.
I've been hearing Belichick a lot with Vegas now.
Yeah, why? It's hard for me to pass up how many Super Bowls does Belichick have? 8 overall, if you include his 2 with the Giants as defensive coordinator. But Belichick notoriously wants total control of everything. And if you have Ryan Poles in place, he's not getting total control of everything. So I don't think that's going to be an option. Haven't even seen that name come out. So Aaron would be the person to throw. So I'd be shocked with that. But it's hard to say, man, you hire an 8-time Super Bowl champion being a bad hire. The Vrabel thing just scares me because I found the stat with Mike Vrabel with Arthur Smith, 43-27. Mike Vrabel after Arthur Smith, 13-21. So your biggest thing of being the stability leader of men guy, when you don't have a plan on offense and the rest of your coaching hires, that is, you know, setting your team up for failure. And if you're going to hire Vrabel, you better understand, what is your plan for offensive coordinator? Who are you pairing with Caleb Williams? What is your plan for Caleb Williams? Because the Bears have already wasted year one. So now they have 4 more years under Caleb's rookie deal, and that's the window. So by year 3 and year 4, the Bears need to be competing for NFC championships and going to the Super Bowl before you start going into the Caleb Williams extension and start going things out. So this is the rookie quarterback conundrum. This is where you can pay, you know, people. The Bears have $80 million in salary cap after this year. So they're going to be able to pay to have people, and they have a young core. You can't mess this up. So if you're going to bring in Vrabel, okay, cool. You're going to be the leader of men, but you better get a detailed plan of who are the people I'm bringing in, because you saw how bad Shane Waldron was as a hire, and all of a sudden we switch him up to Thomas Brown, and you saw how much better the offense has been. So these hires mean so much more of what you're bringing in too. I like Ben Johnson. He's already said he's calling the plays. So that's an Andy Reid type thing that's going on where, hey, I'm calling the plays. I'm in total control of this team. This is where I go. He's been what I've liked most about, besides all the offensive, you know, creativity and what he's done with there. What I like most about Ben Johnson is he could have taken, I believe it was the Panthers job or the Commanders job last year. And he backed out and said, no, I'll wait for the right one. There was a lot of people interested, and he didn't jump at the first chance. So he knows his value. He knows what he wants to go do and what's going to be the right fit. So I'm hoping the Bears will be it. But if we're going to go these other routes, if it's Vrabel, there better be a clear, clear plan of what you're going to do with your coordinator positions.
Yeah, I think the key for the Bears is they definitely need to hit a home run and an offensive coordinator. And Ben Johnson is exactly that. He's the most creative, best play caller in the game right now, offensively, hands down. I don't think that's even debatable right now in the NFL. There's some other guys that are pretty good, but he's the top guy. Vrabel, you know, maybe he goes to Ohio State if Ryan Day gets canned. There's been rumors there. If he does get canned, he could jump ship. He could go to the college game. He's an Ohio State alum. He was there working there as a, you know, defensive coordinator slash coach with Urban Meyer in the early days there, getting that program on the rebuild. So that's a possibility if Ohio State does decide to move off Ryan Day. But yeah, for the Bears, Ben Johnson makes the most sense given that creativity he's got, the offensive weapons, they've got money. I mean, for the Bears, another thing they got to be worried about with Thomas Brown, let's say he wins four of these five games to end, and we've seen it.
All these intern coaches
become the guy. It's like, oh shit.
Because you already know they're going to say Brown's
a leader of men. Look what he's already done with the offense.
Yeah, in three short weeks.
This is the worst case.
This is the worst case scenario for Jason and the Bears is the Browns a home run these next five games.
Oh, it's already started. I'll tell you, in the press conference today, you got all of Twitter. This guy's got Mike Tomlin vibes. He's got Tomlin vibes, and you know he's no nonsense, engaging with the players. Accountable, he's saying all the right things. So he's impressive. But yeah, I'm glad Aaron brought that up because as good as Thomas Brown could be, this guy's gone from passing game coordinator to offensive coordinator to head coach in 4 weeks right now.
Impressive.
So, impressive rise.
It's like Game of Thrones type of rise to the top here.
Really getting through the ranks and sitting on the Iron Throne at Hallis Hall in Chicago.
Well,
I don't love that because, don't give me this small sample size of minor success being the vision for the franchise, because what are you going to be doing to sell? Now, I'll say this. If they pass on Thomas Brown, maybe he's the most attractive candidate out there outside of Ben Johnson, and all of a sudden he's going to lead some team for the next 20
years.
That'd
be fucking hilarious. That'd be so great.
It'd be so on par for the Bears.
It'd be really good.
Yeah, I mean, also the problem is if Brown comes in, he's got the respect of the players. So if they win, you're going to have a lot of players have his back. This is what happened with the Raiders, right? Antonio Pierce got the job because basically Max Crosby, their top defensive player, said, if he's gone, I'm gone. So if you have leaders come out and say that, I mean, I don't know if the Bears even have a leader right now because all their guys are pretty young. They don't have anybody that's really stepped up that has that team captain vibe that I know of. Jason may be able to speak on it.
I'll say it's Jalen Johnson. So Bears cornerback, one of the best in the league. Rumor has it was he went off on Eberflus and the coaching staff in postgame, basically just ripping them. And many are crediting him with the change because Poles and Kevin Warren were in the locker room after the game. And I think he was the leading in the charge of how, he is really done with it. And for Johnson, he's been in the league for 5 years and know nothing but losing. And so his personal thing is like, I'm one of the best corners of the league. He doesn't get the respect he deserves, I think, in the national media. And he's been on nothing but losers where he locked down Justin Jefferson last week. He held Amon-Ra St. Brown to a pretty, pedestrian performance this last week as well, too. So he's doing his part and the defense has been doing their part. But stupid, coaching decisions or lack of preparation has led to this guy having to sit on a losing team for his entire first half of his career.
Cool. I'm going to wrap this up here so we can go to college football real quick. Let's take like a quick 5,000 foot view of the playoffs right now. 70% of the season's done. We only got a few more weeks left. Bills are a lock. Chiefs are a lock, unfortunately. Steelers are a lock.
Yeah.
And then we got,
I think, the seven teams that are in right now.
Chargers, Broncos.
Ravens.
Texans. Do Colts take that away?
It's going to be awfully tough, man. I'd say right now those seven teams are in the driver's seat.
National League, Eagles on top. You got Commanders right behind them.
Wait. The NFC?
Yeah, the National League now.
What?
you said the National League.
We're not talking baseball, man.
Whatever, dude. Who gives a shit? You guys fuck up all the time on these fucking podcasts. I'll correct you guys.
No. I don't want to correct you, but Rome, you've always said, if I fuck up, correct me. You've always said.
You've been calling LaFleur LaFlower like so many times now for like weeks. That's just like, fuck it. I don't care anymore.
Dude, I don't care. I mean, you told me to correct you every fucking time. This is what you told me and Jason. Am I right, Jason?
You are absolutely right. And so I just want
to... If you want
the change... I'll let Kyle Murphy be Murphy, And I'll let it be the National League. Let's continue. Let's continue.
Eagles, Commanders, do the Cowboys. They won back-to-back games. McCarthy has been pulling a coaching exercise out of his ass. I still think he's pretty decent. Not my favorite coach, but he's been doing a pretty good job. Do they fucking sneak in? 5-7. They're not completely out of it now. Seahawks, Cardinals, Rams. 49ers are not even out of it. They're still a game and a half back. Lions, Vikings, Packs, Falcons, Bucks. Who wins it out of those two? They're both tied 6-6 with Falcons owning the tiebreaker.
I mean,
it's packed.
The Falcons have been disappointing all year. They should have ran away with this division altogether. I your guy Baker, I don't know why you wouldn't like him at this point to really pull this out. But there's only one team getting in from the NFC South. I think it's one of those two teams, whether it's Falcons or Buccaneers.
Agreed. The
Commanders, the NFC East, they have that on lock. And then the three teams in the NFC North are a lock as well, along with the Eagles winning the East. I'm sorry, I said the Commanders winning the East, but they're going to finish second. So the Eagles win the East. So, I mean, you pretty much have Lions, Eagles, Vikings, Packers, Commanders all on lock. Someone needs to win the NFC West. And so I think winner of NFC West and NFC South, and that's who it is. So I think it's tight, but it's probably Buccaneers. And at this point, I think you guys made the right call at the beginning of the year, and it's probably the Seahawks.
Well, I picked them to be the wild card. I didn't pick them to win it.
I said they had a shot to win the division.
Yeah.
They've got at Arizona this weekend, Green Bay, Minnesota. I mean, they got a tough schedule.
Who do you guys like more? Seahawks, Arizona? Or even the Rams. You give the Rams a shot, or even the Niners. Let's do a pick right now. Drum
49ers
roll.
Are done.
Or you have a clip of you saying that.
Cardinals. I mean, I'm going to say this. The winner of the Cardinals-Seahawks this week is probably going to win that division.
I would say the Cardinals have the most favorable schedule left after that game because they play New England and Carolina before they finish up with the Rams and Niners.
Carolina's been playing pretty good now for 2 weeks.
They have. You segued into the Bears, and I want to interrupt, but I will say not biggest wins of the week. It wasn't a win for the Panthers, but I would say that was one of the most
professional. A good loss?
It was a good loss, and they've had a couple wins and a good loss. So
that was a good win for Tampa. Tampa, I want Tampa to get in. I just think those two losses to Atlanta might come back to haunt them when it gets to that tiebreaker. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, they should have took one of those, that's for sure.
Both got big games. I mean, Tampa's still got to go to the Chargers. But then they got Vegas, Carolina, New Orleans at home. They should take care of business all those games. Falcons still got at Minnesota, at Washington. Tampa's got the schedule to get in. Can they take care of business?
Real.
The NFC West, I think, is difficult. They're going to all play each other. The Rams got to play Buffalo this week. The Seahawks got a pretty couple of hard games. So do the Niners. You said their schedule. So, man, it's going to come down to probably a 9-8 winner at this point, and there's going to be like probably three tiebreakers that decide the division.
Do you think there's actually a 9-8 division winner there, or possibly we're looking at a 8-9 division winner?
Well,
there.
Seattle's already got 7 wins.
Yeah,
if they win this week and they get to 8. If they lose, they're 7-6, 7-6. Nine wins. You're going to have to win 9 games for sure to get in the division.
Yeah. 9 wins for sure. I think if anyone gets 10, which is more likely the Seahawks, that gives them the division offhand.
Before we go to college, since we've been doing this like typically like the Lions on Thursday, I just want to grab your guys' take on Thursday's game, Packers at the Lions. It's going to be a hell of a fucking game. Who do you guys got?
I check the line really quick. So you got the Lions.
Three and a half right now. Lions are really banged up, man.
They're really pretty banged up, especially on defense. Is it too much injuries on defense?
Green Bay went in there and beat them last year on Thanksgiving Day. I would lean towards 3.5, man. That hook's worth the points, I think. 3.5, Green Bay.
Your team, Green Bay, with 3.5?
Might be my early lean right now.
Yeah, early lean. You, Jason?
Yeah, I would take the Packers 3.5 as well. Yeah, worried about that Lions defense, as you mentioned. I think this is going to be... You don't see a lot of them on Thursdays all the time. It might be a heck of a shootout here that, 51.5, maybe the number you're looking more. Is that going to be an over?
Is that the over?
Yeah. 51.5 is what I see over under. And I would lean out to the over right now that we might see some points put up on Thursday.
Yeah. I'm going to take the Lions. I think they played a pretty sloppy game, and that was last week. So they basically had a week off, shorter week for the Packers. So I think they rebound. Goff, 4 touchdowns in this game.
I will
no
say
way,
this.
No way Goff gets 4 touchdowns, and it's not a short week. Both played on Thanksgiving Day. Both teams have a full week.
I totally forgot Packers played.
Yeah.
So Packers got the advantage coming into this game right now.
I'm going to lean, though, Roma. I will take the +3.5 for the Packers, but I do think the Lions still win the game.
Yeah. Cool. I can't wait, man. That's going to be a fun Thursday night game to talk about. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. Some college football, F1, and anything fucking else. It's already been 1 hour and 5 minutes. We're doing a Bill Simmons length pod today. We're back to talk some college football. Just for fun, we were looking up some videos right now. It was like Melee, Fight Central, UFC, boxing this weekend in college football. Arizona State, but that was pretty mild. North Carolina game, the Michigan, Ohio State game, that was probably the biggest one. That was pretty great. But before we go into that, actually, let's just go into that. Like, that was like a fun game. That was a fun game. I don't know if you guys remember, Aaron had a prediction in the beginning of the season that Michigan was a 5-6 win team at best. And we pulled out win number 7 and the biggest win of the year, 7-5 against what? Number 2 ranked Ohio State rivalry game. This is a game that Ohio State probably was looking forward to winning, right? Cementing their positioning for the title game for the playoffs. And they got their ass smacked, handed it to them. And Ryan Day, lots of drama with that. Disappointed. Does he even come back? Does he even want to stay in Ohio State? Does he want to stay in Columbus? 13-10, hell of a game. I was watching the post game. Mullings was getting interviewed. All of a sudden, the interview stops short because there's a fight breaks down in the background. You see Michigan trying to plant the flag. And it was like a brawl. It was a good 5-6 minute brawl. It was classic. And of course, they're saying like, yeah, you know, there's no space for this in football, as it happens, even in the NFL. We forgot to talk about that in the Jaguar game with Lawrence got hit with a, was it a dirty play? I don't know.
Was it? Dirty. Yeah, it was dirty.
All right. It was pretty fast, to be fair.
It was, but it was a dirty play. In the 80s, they would have said that was like one of the big hits of the week, but it was a dirty play.
It would have made ESPN's top 10 hits of the week for sure.
Dude,
was it jacked up?
Jacked up.
He's getting jacked up.
Dude, when I watch old highlights like that on YouTube, I'm like, fuck, dude, these hits were bad.
Yeah.
Guys are getting concussed all over the place. It was 5-Central, though, man. I think that was the biggest game of this weekend, I think. Michigan, Ohio State. Michigan wins. They win 4 in a row. Ryan Day, 1-4 against Michigan. This is a game that they should have ended the 3-game winning streak before Michigan retools in the quarterback room next year and on offense. Unexpected. They'll probably lose next year as well. Does Ryan Day take off? Which is really funny, though. I was kind of thinking, like, where did Ryan Day coach before Ohio State? He just kind of inherited it. Usually, like, people that come up in these blue-chip programs, they've, like, brought up at least, like, 2 or 3 other programs before they end up in a place like Ohio State, but not Ryan Day. Isn't that weird?
He was within Ohio State, so he was the OC and QB coach under Urban Meyer.
Yeah.
Before that,
he was
a quarterback's coach for the 49ers.
Yep. And Eagles and Boston College and Temple. So he made his way around as assistant. So it is an interesting head coaching hire, you know, given, you know, he really didn't have any big time head coaching experience prior to this.
Well, it was Urban Meyer that gave him the keys. So it wasn't like Ohio State went outside the box. Urban Meyer's basically was stepping down.
What happened again?
Was going to the NFL, right, and gave the keys to the Cadillac to Ryan Day. And that's how Ryan Day became the head coach of Ohio State.
Wild. No, yeah, that was a big win. Obviously, it's going to impact the playoff seeding, rankings, all that good stuff. Any comments on that game or any of the other big games that we saw this weekend?
That was a big game. Obviously, a little bit of a shuffle with the rankings, because now Ohio State's out of the Big Ten title game. They don't have a chance for the first round bye, which they're probably looking to get. At the same time, though, they don't have to play in the Big Ten title game, so now they get saved an extra game. So if they were to lose that game, hypothetically, you know, they would have been playing the extra game to still play a first round playoff game. So I've been talking about that every week, but it's going to be very interesting in the rankings on how they kind of decide this first round of playoffs for teams that didn't play in their conference championship game.
This is not the final one tomorrow, right? Is the penultimate, so the final one's next week?
Yeah.
Essentially, the final one is this upcoming week, or coming up Tuesday. I mean, conference champions, we know how that's going to play out. I mean, Penn State, Oregon are both in. SMU, Clemson, and the ACC, the winner's in. And then Boise State, UNLV, that winner gets in. But Georgia, Texas from the SEC, they are in.
They're in. And that you said Iowa State, Arizona State?
Yeah, the winner of that's going to get in.
Oh, the final review is on Sunday.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting because a Clemson win gets them in, but then do you hold out an 11-2 SMU team over a 3-loss Bama SEC team?
I told Rome this: if Clemson beats SMU, it bodes well for South Carolina because they just beat Clemson at Clemson this weekend. So if Clemson beats SMU, SMU's out, and South Carolina probably is that 12th final team in over Alabama and Ole Miss, given the fact that they just beat Clemson at Clemson, and now Clemson is representing the ACC.
Yeah, it's really tough. Alabama, I just don't think, like, their losses have been pretty bad, and even some of their ones have been, like, nail-biters, games that they should have lost. The thing that I like about Ole Miss is the good teams that they beat, the ranked teams, like, they demolished them. Like, they manhandled them. Their losses, though, not great, right? The one to Kentucky, they had a close one against LSU. And then who else did they lose to?
Florida,
that's right. Which Florida, not bad, right? They're having a pretty good year. South Carolina, though, they're ballers. I kind of like leaning towards them as them deserving a playoff berth if there was one with 3 losses to get in. But
Well, I'll tell you the buzz online I saw today was Alabama is the favorite.
Yeah, they're the big brand.
The betting favorite to get in. So regardless of any of the, you know, resume looking and things like that, like, this is where the politics come in, and where does the brand, you know, tell you, and that's where Alabama's going to lean. Where was it last year? Because they got in the 4 seed last year, where there was questions around even them getting in last year.
Well, they had, what, 2 losses?
They had 1 loss.
1 loss?
Well, did they? Yeah.
No, they won the SEC championship game. So they got,
yeah,
they
lost.
Over
they
Georgia.
Lost to Texas. So then Texas went on. So Texas was guaranteed to get in. The question was between Alabama and undefeated Florida State.
Florida State, yeah.
Obviously, the committee said the brand, and then Florida State not having their quarterback got them in. I would agree. I think the brand of Alabama is bigger than South Carolina, obviously, and Ole Miss. But if you look at, and that's what it comes down to. I mean, 12 guys are going to decide this. I mean, us three, we could probably say we could each have one or two different teams. But Alabama, bad loss at Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt only finished 6-6.
Did they?
They got demolished by Oklahoma. Say what you want. Oklahoma just got whipped by LSU by 20 points the next week following that. Ole Miss, you talked about early loss against Kentucky. They lost a tough game at LSU, a shootout. Now Bama went in there and won a month ago by like 20 points. So these guys kind of like canceled games out if you look at it. But if you look at the last 6 games, South Carolina 6-0, Ole Miss is 4-2, Alabama's 4-2. And like I said, South Carolina, I've been saying, a team nobody wants to play. They just beat a number 12 team that was the last team out ahead of Alabama in the previous playoff ranking in Clemson at Clemson. If Clemson beats SMU, if I was choosing just off merit, I'd give the edge to South Carolina. But the brand is the brand, and it's Bama. And Bama getting in and Notre Dame hosting them, I'm not going to complain if that's the game.
Interesting. Who are you guys liking in the Big 12 championship?
Aaron's been on Arizona State most of
good.
The year.
I think they're like the hottest team in the country right now.
Yeah, I would tend to lean with Arizona State. The Big 12 has really been up for grabs for a lot of the year. We've had, you know, BYU and Colorado kind of enter the fray, but I think this is Arizona State's game to lose.
Agree. Arizona State, if they can, they've had woes in the kicking game, but they've been getting touchdowns. They're playing a little bit better than Iowa State. They're a little bit better than them. Arizona State, who would have thunk it? I think they're going to get in and win the Big 12 championship.
It's kind of crazy, like with like all like the upsets, because Clemson loses, but then Miami loses, so they back their way into the championship game. Do you guys like Clemson's chances?
I mean, Clemson's been up and down kind of all year. They were my pick to win the ACC at the beginning of the year, but I did not see SMU coming. I thought this was a Clemson Miami ACC title game, but Clemson kind of played themselves out of it until Mario Cristobal did what we all knew he was going to do and blew it when he really had the perfect opportunity to put this Miami team kind of back in the, you know, top of the college football, you know, world where it was in the early 2000s. But I think Clemson's definitely got the skill still. And SMU, I think, has just been under the radar. No one's talked about them all year. Quietly putting together a good 11-1 season. I'm going to pick Clemson, though.
SMU is a good football team. I've liked them. Their only loss is a 3-point loss to BYU early in the year. Clemson's been playing well. Should have beaten South Carolina through a late interception with a chance to tie that game or win it there towards the end. Clemson's more talented. SMU, I think, is a little bit ahead of the curve their first year coming into the ACC. Got a lot of talent. They're young and raw. They haven't really been tested. I'm leaning towards Clemson winning this game, but I wouldn't be shocked if SMU does win and get that automatic berth and a bye in the playoff.
That'd be crazy.
But yeah, going back to what Jason said, Miami 21-0 lead against Syracuse. And
see
they
what
lose
happened,
that game.
I didn't catch the second half of that game.
I mean, Miami's been, they've been living on the edge all year, man. We've been talking about it. They were down 25 points in the second half to Cal. They came back and won that game. They had games against Louisville. You had the game, Rome, where you say it was a touchdown. Me and Jason say it was an incomplete pass against Virginia Tech.
Not a touchdown.
So maybe the football gods have come back around. You know, Cristobal was talking a lot of shit after they beat a bad Florida State team, saying they're the best team in the state of Florida. Guess what, Miami? The two best teams in the ACC have always been Clemson and Florida State, and you still ain't won a fucking title. So shut up, Miami. I'm glad they're out of there. Give me Clemson, SMU, all day over those piece of shits from Miami.
I feel the angst.
It's just wild that Miami's never won the ACC.
It's like, wild.
It really is. Like, that's pretty crazy.
It's in my brain because when I think of Miami, you know, you think of the Sean Taylor, Kellen Winslow, you know, Clinton Portis, Willis McGahee. You know, Miami Hurricanes, and this program's been down just so bad for so long. And when they left the Big East, when everyone kind of did, and they joined the ACC, you figure like, oh, besides like, you know, Florida State, you know, this should be, you know, something for Miami to really take up and dominate, you know, some years in the ACC, and they've just been nothing. And then really as Clemson, you know, dominated for quite a long time, and they've been on the downfall the past 2 years. It's been theirs for the taking, and they still can't get it done. So, it was still an improvement year for Miami, but given that they got the right quarterback in the transfer portal, which they were missing, and Cam Ward was just so outstanding for the first, you know, half, three quarters of the year, it should have been theirs for the taking, and they just blew it like two games that they should have easily won.
Miami had everything set up for them. They got the best quarterback in the transfer portal, maybe the second best quarterback in college football in Cam Ward. Zero teams in the top 25 on their schedule. Everything lined up perfect. Florida State shit the bed. All they had to do was win out and could go probably into the ACC title game and lose and probably still sneak in. Now they've got losses, you know, against Syracuse and Georgia Tech, which isn't, you know, we'll get to Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech's not a bad football team. They blew it, though, man. They definitely did blow it.
Congrats to Jason's Notre Dame for pulling it out. I thought they might get upset, man. That was pretty close.
Never a doubt. First never half, a doubt, man.
49-35. Thank God USC's done. Hopefully, what's-his-face will finally get fired, and that's the end of that.
I don't think Lincoln Riley gets fired. They put a lot of investment into him. I know
they've been losing a lot of recruits.
They have been. I think they lost a couple like this week, and then people entering the portal. So, Notre Dame. It was a trendy thing to pick USC in this game because of obviously the raw talent that USC has, and everyone's waiting for Notre Dame to slip up because the Northern Illinois loss kind of looms with this team, but. Once they kind of figured out, and I mentioned this in, I think, our pod last week, Rome, but once the Notre Dame offense figured out how to use Riley Leonard, both in the air, but specifically on the ground, to really have like a three-headed attack with Leonard, Jeremiah Love, and a Jadarian Price, you know, this team has basically been next to unbeatable, you know, on the ground, in the air, pretty dominant defense. I will say, USC for their effort in the game, they did make it, you know, fairly close throughout the entire game. You know, they were able to score quite a few points on the Notre Dame defense. I think that was the most points the Notre Dame defense had given up all season, and the most since their 31-24 victory over Louisville. So it was their most competitive game since the Louisville game was USC, but they did what they had to do. They won. They pretty much locked themselves into the 5 seed of the college football playoff, and I think they're one of the best teams in the country. I was going back and forth with some friends of mine because they just love all the SEC teams. And so they're just talking Notre Dame's going to get blowout. But, you know, Notre Dame, you know, they took it to Georgia Tech early in the year and beat them 31-13. And now you've seen, you know, Georgia, you know, struggling against Georgia Tech. It was an epic game, but, you know, they struggled against Georgia Tech. And these other playoff, you know, teams like a Miami you talk about lost to Georgia Tech. So Notre Dame has not had an easy schedule. They played, you know, undefeated Navy and Army teams that, you know, were doing good in there. Obviously the FSU wasn't as strong as opponent as it probably looked in the preseason, but
fall from grace, man. It's like an epic fall from grace for FSU.
They're back on top, brother, now. Great hires today and this weekend. I'm feeling great about Florida State, man. I'm bullish. I'm all in right now on them.
Yeah. But,
Yep.
Whatever. We'll get to that next year. We'll talk about your bullish for Florida State.
Go sit at the kids' table, dude.
Yeah. But, I mean, Notre Dame, this has been their best season, you know, in quite a while. And I think they're a threat in the playoff. I think them not getting the first round bye obviously hurts because they're going to have to play the extra game at home. You know, potentially Aaron said Notre Dame, Alabama, you know, hasn't gone well for Notre Dame in the past when they played Alabama in one of these big games, but it'll be exciting.
My bad. The game was pretty close, man. And then in the third quarter, Notre Dame kind of had back-to-back touchdowns. So it was 21-21. That's what I remember. Then all of a sudden, Notre Dame went up 35-21.
Well, Notre Dame sealed the deal of a pick six. They had two there at the end.
And then two more touchdowns. Two pick sixes.
Yes, back-to-back possessions.
And that sealed it, 49-28. That last touchdown didn't mean much.
Yeah, Notre Dame's good, man. They're good. You know, we talk a lot about the Georgia Tech game. They got fortunate that the Georgia Tech quarterback was out. Didn't play that game. That really benefited Notre Dame. I think they still would have beaten Georgia Tech, but it would have been a lot closer than that score indicated. That quarterback was back for Miami and back for Georgia. You see that Georgia Tech's a much better team when he's in the lineup. But Louisville's, that was a gutty win. That was a good win for them. Going to USC, say what you want. This is the same USC team that Penn State should have lost to there at this stadium.
That's true.
Notre Dame's legit. The playoff is open. Anybody really can win it. There's not really one clear-cut favorite outside of maybe Oregon. They have the edge right now. We'll see how they handle Penn State. We know Penn State and James Franklin has never been able to win a big game. He can, you know, kind of put those critics to ease a little bit if he can get a bye and beat Oregon. But that's still a lot of task for those guys.
Penn State number three, Matt, it's just like the... Oh, that's weird. They're ranked number three. Let's start with that Georgia Tech game. That was pretty epic, man. 8 overtimes. I think I caught it in. I jumped in the first quarter. I came back in the fourth because, dude, the score was like 17-20 something at the beginning of the fourth, and all of a sudden we end 44-42. It was a fucking wild fourth quarter. They both scored, what, 2-3 touchdowns each. And I was really playing for Georgia Tech. This team's good. They're better than their 7-5 record for sure.
Yeah, they are. I think Aaron mentioned the injury they had at quarterback. They haven't been great in away games. They were 1-4 away. So they've been, you know, great at home. They were up 17-0 in half. And I think at that point, it was like, hey, this is legit upset alert right now. And even, you know, closing out the third quarter with 17-6 and the game was close and it was in their kind of hands to close out. The overtime was exciting. They were trading blows back and forth. It was really a coin flip. Georgia, you know, they haven't looked as impressive as the Georgia of the last couple years. So, you know, is there, are they going to be the playoff team, you know, going through this stretch? They're not going to get probably the first round bye. Maybe, I don't know. I mean, they might, because Aaron and I, we think about Texas, but Rome, you probably have other thoughts. But it was a big win. It was a big game for Georgia Tech, even though they didn't get the win. But it was what Georgia needed to stay alive, because, man, it would have just thrown the SEC into more chaos for what's going on in that conference this year.
It'd been great.
For sure, man. Georgia definitely needed that win. That win secured them a playoff spot, regardless of what happens against Texas this Saturday.
Agreed.
Georgia's in the playoff. Had they lost, they would have needed to beat Texas again to get locked in.
For sure. When are all the games? This Saturday? Championship games?
Friday night is Boise State, UNLV for the Mountain West and for that at-large, because the winner of that game is going to be the highest group of 5 non-Power 4 ranked teams to win a conference. So the winner of that game is in, and then the other games are on Saturday. I think Georgia, Texas is at 1 o'clock Saturday afternoon.
Let's do the lines for the championship games then on Thursday as well, along with the football or the NFL. Unless you guys want to give your Mountain West take right now.
No, we can save it for Thursday.
I mean, I already know who Jason likes in the Mountain West. He's been on them all
pick.
Year.
Yeah.
And I tend to agree with
him.
It is a home game. Boise State hosted. It's a home game. The Mountain West, if you win the conference regular season, you host the championship game in the conference.
It's on the blue turf, man. It's a wrap.
So we could be looking at back-to-back blue turf games for Boise State here in the playoff, or a bye for them.
I'm going to think it's going to be an NBA Cup game with that blue turf. I will be sure to bring all our preseason predictions next week to see how we did. Well, all our picks, see how that all looks and turned out. But I don't know. I didn't really have much to talk about for college football. Like, that was it, basically. Michigan, fuck yeah. Nebraska, you guys fucking let me down again. Not going to talk about you. UCLA, you too.
UCLA beat the Fresno State, man. They got the 5 wins.
Did they?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, they did. That was kind of ugly, though, the first half.
It was an ugly game.
It was bad, dude.
I didn't watch much of it, but...
Yeah.
I mean, I'm surprised, Rome, you're not bringing up Texas victory over Texas A&M.
Well, you know, it was expected, Aaron. You know, when you expect... When there's, like, an expectation of winning championships...
Do you got Texas winning the championship? I'll take the field against
Texas.
They
were my preseason pick.
Right.
They're my preseason pick, Texas.
I'll take the field all day over those guys.
Yeah. Yeah, they're going to... They're going to beat Georgia this week for sure. So
I think they might. Georgia's banged up. They're tired, man. Georgia's fatigued, dude. They've been in wars, unlike Texas.
Yeah, 11-1, ranked number two in the country. Not bad for the fourth, fifth best team in the SEC. That's all I gotta say.
I still stand by that.
Looking wild. It's the wildest take.
Your best win in the SEC is against what, the eighth best team? Get out of here.
Still wild.
Yeah, I would say we talked about it in the preseason and just all the playoff talk for college, but the one thing I have not enjoyed, and these conferences are just too big, not to split them up and have more parity in the scheduling. The fact that they don't do, you got, 18 teams in the Big Ten. The fact that you just don't have nine, in each division of the Big Ten. And then
you play.
I know they used to, and they got rid of it. And now you have this kind of randomizer playing schedules. But now this is what, Texas gets gifted, this favorable schedule of SEC opponents while other teams are playing, way tougher schedules, from an SEC perspective. And just the imbalance, I think, is not giving a good read of what can go there. And from a content perspective for us, it gives us much more to talk about because now we're talking about how many three-loss SEC teams are going to get in because of the biases, that the SEC and the Big Ten are going to have to get three or four, probably four teams each in every year. And there's going to be this rationale that, a three-loss, Bama team who lost every big game they had, but they play in the SEC is better than, a one-loss SMU team or whatever the arguments may be. So there's something there, but that's probably not going to get ever fixed. You're just going to have this utter chaos of randomness schedule stuff because the schedules are so imbalanced.
They'll kind of equal out once we get to 16 teams. And
no, I think the thing is the ACC or the other conferences, the Big 12 have just got to get better overall. I mean, you had SMU was great. Clemson was great. Miami was great. The fourth team that was supposed to be great in that conference was Florida State. They weren't.
Speaking of teams that didn't win big games, look at Miami's schedule, man. They haven't.
Well, they had beaten no teams in the top 25.
Nope.
And lost to two. I don't know if Georgia Tech is ranked now or not.
I thought Virginia Tech was ranked at the time.
No, Virginia Tech was bad this year. I don't even know if Virginia Tech got bowl eligible. They won five, maybe six games.
I don't even know.
They beat a Cal team that just got demolished by SMU. SMU beat them, 31-7 over the weekend?
Yeah, if I'm looking at this right, there was no ranked teams that Miami beat the entire year.
6-6.
Virginia Tech?
Yeah, mailed the pack.
6-6 gets you to a bowl game, man.
That's bullshit.
Yeah, Aaron's not wrong. I just think it's more, you're going to have this conversation about a three-loss SEC team every year, that you're going to get some rationale about, we got three SEC teams that all have three losses, but they beat each other, and they should be the best teams in there versus, some of these other conferences, the resumes. Aaron's not wrong. Like, Miami and SMU easily probably both could be in the playoff right now if Miami does what they're, what they should have done all year and they go undefeated going in. And they could afford the loss in the ACC championship game, and they probably would have a pretty good argument. But it's just tough, I think, with the amount of teams in the conferences and the schedules you're looking at. You're just going to have a ton of this, and you're going to have a lot of conference bias, I think, with the SEC and Big Ten, because those, you talk about a Power Four, there really is a Power Two conference overall.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, Jason, it's two conferences, the SEC and the Big Ten. And then the ACC. The ACC really traditionally has been two teams. I mentioned Florida State and Clemson. Since Miami's joined the conference, I think Clemson's won it seven times. Florida State's won it five.
It's too bad there's not a fifth conference like a Pac-12. Oh, yeah. Jeez. What a shame. I mean,
it's basically the Mountain West or Mountain West Part B, whatever you want to call it now.
At a certain point, Rome, you start, this would be another pod another day, but like the ACC's terribly unhappy with their TV contract because when it was signed, it was great, but it's bad now. Florida State and Miami went out of the ACC. There's a point where these teams are going to be going to the Big Ten or SEC, and you're talking about those conferences being 20 teams. And then, hey, if you get three 20-team conferences that makes up the 60 best football teams in the country, that's what it is.
I think we talked about this, though. Like, I think that's where we're going. We're going to probably go from 134 schools, whatever it is, down to, top 80, and everything else is relegated, it's like a different Division I, Division II thing. Real quick, There's not like a real quick path for the new Pac-12 to get that 18 to become a legitimate conference, but the Mountain West does have that. And now they're working on a TV deal. So my prediction is that the Pac-12 doesn't happen. Mountain West just bolsters up. Is that the right word? Bolsters up. Oh, I can't really talk right now. I'm pretty fucking tired. 11 o'clock. I've been up since 3:30 this morning. Yeah, that's all I got to say.
So your prediction, there is no Pac-12 or Pac-10. And it's just going to be the Mountain West Conference.
Yeah, it'll end up being a big Mountain West Conference. Mountain West ate up the Pac-10, Pac-12, whatever it is, the Pac-2, the Pac-7 right now.
Well, you got Boise State joined the Pac-12, right? Or is in line to?
Yeah,
I mean,
the
shocker was UNLV pulling out. I thought UNLV for sure was going to join the Pac-12, and then at the last minute, like, stayed in the Mountain West. That would have given them the 18 that they needed, which makes sense since UNLV and Boise State have been the best two teams in that conference for the last 2 years.
Yeah, so you have Boise State, Colorado State, Fresno State, and San Diego State.
All right. With Oregon State and Washington State, right?
All the states.
All the states. It's a state conference. The state of disarray. The state of disappointment.
Isn't Utah State's in there now too as the seventh team, right?
I didn't see.
That's the
Utah.
Mormon state.
Wasn't Gonzaga joining, but in basketball only or something like that?
Yeah. Was that the Pac?
Yeah, it was the Pac. Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah.
So they will have they're gonna have to work it out because you can't have a basketball power conference or whatever conference and
they're short one school still.
I think UCLA should go back to the Pac-12. That's just me.
I think USC should too, but
yeah. Well, sometimes the grass isn't greener when there's more green on the other side.
What conference is New Mexico's in the Mountain West?
Dude, I didn't even know the Mountain West had a legitimate fucking.
Where's New Mexico State? What
year?
Conference is New Mexico State in? I mean, the Pac-12 is gonna take one other team. They're just going to.
There's nothing. Everything's locked in.
They still got a year. They'll figure something out.
They got one fucking year. Usually, it takes another year or two, to get them in the conference, which means it's too late. The school have to come in right away. Someone's going to have to pay a $30 million or $10 million, whatever it is, buyout. Someone is.
It's going to be the conference if they want it to happen.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, the Pac-12 already had an egg on their face once. They can't afford it twice because this would be it for them.
Well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, F1 and anything else?
Sounds good.
All right. All right. Now we're going to talk some F1, which was this past Saturday in Qatar. There's one left, Abu Dhabi, right, Jason?
Yep, Abu Dhabi Grand Prix this weekend, so it'll be the season finale. About last week, the Drivers' Championship's already been wrapped up by Max Verstappen, but still got plenty to race for the Constructors' Championship after this weekend.
Yeah, totally forgot that it was on until me and my daughter went to go get the Christmas tree, and like they're already talking about like the initial results. I guess it just wrapped up. I always have like sports radio on in the car. But when we got back, they were doing a replay. So my daughter did catch the last 20 laps. I didn't think she was actually going to watch it, but then she saw a pink car, got really pumped up. She was like, "Is there girls driving?" I'm like, "Not yet. Maybe you could be the first girl driver." She's like, "Yeah." And then she just sat there eating her Cheerios and watching F1. So didn't see that one coming. That was not on my bingo card for Thanksgiving. She watched a lot of football, though. So we might have a young little F1 fan now. She wants to race something. So,
well, this was the first year, I will say, there is an all-women's Formula One kind of series, the F1.
Really?
Yeah, the F1 Academy. It was started by Susie Wolf. She's the wife of Total Wolf, who's the CEO of Mercedes-AMG Petronas F1 team. But yeah, Susie Wolf's a former racing driver herself, and so she got all 10 teams on the F1 grid to invest into, you know, into an all-women series called F1 Academy. So that was actually decided this week. Abby Pulling, who drives for Alpine, which is the pink car, So she drove for Alpine. She actually clinched the F1 Academy's first title this weekend. So she had podium in every race so far this year. So, you know, if your daughter wants to see it, there is a path for women to get into F1, and it's the F1 Academy is a good starting ground for them.
I'm trying to get her to golf, trying to get her to do tennis. We're doing some gymnastics. It'd be really fun if she just picks up F1 racing. That'd be kind of cool, though. I'll be one of the mechanics for sure. I'd be totally down with that.
We'll have to get her to a pole position or K1 space first to see how she can do the carts around the track over here. You know, get her started.
Well, she drives like her mom. That'd be fucking maniac. So we'll see. Maybe there's a chance. But yeah, man, break it down. Verstappen wins. Heard a lot of drama went down.
Yeah, a ton of drama went down. Really, from the qualifying is where the drama kind of started, and that was on Saturday. So this weekend format, I think we talked about it before, but there was a sprint race. There's a couple of those throughout the year. I think four or five or so sprint races. So on Saturdays, they do kind of a mini race. It's like 19 laps that they'll do. Kind of, if you're attending the F1 in person, it gives you kind of another event to go to. So they do a no pit stop race. There wasn't a ton of drama with that. The McLarens dominated the sprint. They finished 1-2 with Oscar Piastri winning, and then Lando Norris finishing second. So the McLarens do what they need to do to clinch the title. But the drama got in after the sprint race was done in the qualifying effort, because Max Verstappen won the pole. So had put a great lap time in. Guy wins the championship. Still's not taking anything for granted at this point. He's just going to continue, you know, putting up great outings. But there was a little bit of drama with him and Mercedes driver George Russell because...
Yeah, what was that about?
So at one point, you know, these guys go out and they kind of do like a warm-up lap prior to them doing kind of what they call the flying lap, which is basically what their qualifying lap is going to be. And it's an open, 10, 15, 20-minute session, and you're just trying to put in your best lap. And so you're kind of like, hey, first lap, you're going slower, you're warming up the tires before you do your flying lap. Well, there's a minimum speed you're supposed to do, but at some point in this kind of warm-up lap, Verstappen was accused by George Russell of driving too slow, and Russell almost rear-ended him at a point. And so after the qualifying was over, George Russell kind of went and kind of blamed the referees, which is the stewards or the F1 officials, just saying, hey, this was a dangerous maneuver. You know, he should get a grid penalty for this. The F1 officials unprecedentedly gave Verstappen a one-position grid penalty, took the pole away from him, which gave the pole to George Russell. And so Verstappen took that personally, because when they started the race, he went straight at it and is like, I'm going to just take the lead in the first lap regardless. And he had some really harsh words for George Russell, basically that basically called him out for being a fraud. He's got a public persona. And then is one thing where it's this nice, happy, you know, British, you know, guy.
Yeah,
and
in
then
person, behind, but yeah, in different. Person, but yeah.
Yeah. Behind the scenes, he's a bit of a snake. And he's like, I lost all respect for this guy. He basically went at me and just trying to take the pole position. So that was like kind of the drama in the race. I think the officials overall were the biggest kind of drama coming out of the race. Not just the result, because you had Lando Norris getting a stop and go penalty that basically took him out of the points, which was just an insane penalty because he was speeding during a caution, which was kind of a brief, not a safety car caution, but they basically put like a, you know, just a brief caution if there's some, you know, car goes off the track or something like that. But apparently he didn't lift the gas, and he was still going flat out gas and gain ground on Verstappen. And so they gave him a 10-second drive-through penalty, which basically just takes him out of the top 10. So that was devastating. And then we talked about this in the pre-pod. You had one of the Williams cars lose their mirror, and it was on the front stretch outside of the racing line. But this is where a lot of the passing goes at the Qatar track, is down the front stretch. So you have this mirror on there for like 2 to 3 laps. Eventually, Valtteri Bottas like runs it over, destroys the mirror to a million pieces over the track. Lewis Hamilton and Carlos Sainz blow out their left front tires. Don't know if it was connected or they're just wearing, but it seemed very fishy that all of a sudden there's debris all the track. But the stewards and the F1 officials don't call a yellow flag prior to that thing exploding all over the track. And there was other weird penalties throughout the race. So tons of drama. There is, and we can talk about this in future pods, there is a pretty big rift between the F1 president and the drivers and the way this stuff's getting officiated, and the F1 president basically is telling, you know, the drivers, don't worry about it. I'm in charge of the sport. You guys worry about your own stuff. And he has not been popular, to say the least, amongst the driver's side and the teams. But the F1's drama with officiating, just like every other sport, is pretty crazy. But some of their time penalty decisions definitely impact the outcomes of these races, like pretty severely, as in the case of Lando Norris.
Yeah, wasn't Lando like in the top five? He was racing like fourth or fifth at the time of that penalty, 10-second penalty, right?
I think he was second or third.
Yeah, he was
like
up
right
there.
He was right behind Verstappen. So, I mean, that put him, he was able to crawl back and get 10th, and he put in the fastest lap to give McLaren 2 points. But that really gave a lot to Ferrari, because, you know, that kept Ferrari in the hunt for the constructors going into Abu Dhabi. So at least it gives F1 a little more drama into the final race, because it's McLaren versus Ferrari for the constructors. These are basically the two kind of heritage brands of Formula One. Ferrari has the most constructors titles. McLaren is the second oldest F1 team. They have seven or eight constructors titles. They're like third all time. Williams is second. So two of the biggest brands, I think, in F1 right now. And McLaren's really been on this comeback the last 2 years. And Ferrari, you know, they haven't won in forever. It's been Red Bull and Mercedes dominating for the last 15 years. So it'll be interesting what the final is going to bring us. I think you're going to have a big battle between, you know, Lando Norris and Piastri versus Leclerc and Sainz. And we talked about it last week, Rome. This is kind of Carlos Sainz's farewell for Ferrari before he goes into Williams next year.
Nice. Aaron, you got anything?
No, I mean, Jason pretty much summed it up. I mean, yeah, I mean, Verstappen,
you actually watched
it. Yeah, he came out early. Like you said, he took that first turn. He basically blew by Russell. A lot of safety cars were out. I mean, you had a three cars just right off the bat ran into each other there. So I think the safety car was out, what, three times on this race? At least, right? At least twice.
Yeah, at least twice. You had five cars not finish the race. So it was a lot of people out. You had the Kick Saber team with Joubran Yuzhu. Hadn't had any points the entire year. He's the Chinese driver for a Kick Saber. He got eighth place, so he got their first points of the year. It was the first time they had been in the top 10, so it was his best, I think, tied his best career finish, which was big for him, because this is his last two races, because he doesn't have a seat for next year for any of the F1 teams. So there was some interesting stuff going on this race with five DNFs. Lewis Hamilton, you know, my favorite driver, there was super drama with him at a certain point. The car was not good. He had the flat tire.
He had a 5-second penalty, too, because he got to an early start.
Yeah, they gave him a 5-second penalty because they said he got a jump start.
Jesus.
And then at a certain point, they made him come in, and he basically said, I want to retire the car. And they told him no, because you'll have to serve the 5-second penalty in the next race. And then he went back out anyways. And then they said, okay, retire the car. And he didn't. And he just finished the race anyways. So, yeah, there was just drama, I think, top to bottom for this race as a whole. So it was entertaining on a track that I will say it's not one of my favorites. And it was another weird thing. I haven't heard him talked about much, but it was there's a graphic for every F1 weekend that usually says total weekend attendance. So, like, you know, when I went to the British Grand Prix, it was like 400,000, or the Vegas, it was like 350,000 people that attended like the weekend. For the Qatar Grand Prix, it just said weekend attendance sold out.
Yeah, I saw that. I did see that.
And I swear, when you're watching this race, like, you barely see anyone at this track. So
it's a weird track, man. It's a weird track.
It
seems so much different than watching the one in Vegas. It just was like, yeah, it was like a weekend track that people were just kind of, you know, racing around.
It was built, I think, I don't know how, it was famous for how quickly it was built, because basically at the time of the World Cup, they're just like, hey, we'll just build an F1 track too. So they just constructed this whole thing in the middle of the desert and put it up. But yeah, a lot of there's a lot of people, you know, fans of F1 that love the street circuits better. There's generally obviously better views when you're going down the Vegas Strip, or you're in Monaco, or you're in, you know, in Baku in Azerbaijan, which goes down some really like cool architecture. So street tracks generally are a lot cool visually on TV and for the drivers, and there's a little more challenge. So there's some circuits. Like, I think Texas is a really good circuit, and the Circuit of the Americas that people like, because there's a lot of elevation changes and different turns. You know, the British Grand Prix, I really enjoyed and thought that is an interesting track. But a circuit like this one where it's just in the middle of the desert. It's, you know, fairly flat. It just really wears in the left tire. There isn't a lot of passing. The only true passing kind of lane is on the front stretch where the main DRS zone is at. So just not overall, just not a great place where there's a lot of good racing.
Real quick, I was kind of curious. Sergio Perez leaving Red Bull. I was reading something that he's technically on contract, so they really can't fire him. But there's like there has to be like some negotiations going on. Red, there's like a few guys on the junior track that are going to get the promotion up and take his place. But what do you do with Perez? He doesn't really have a team. If he doesn't race with Red Bull, he's obviously going to get let go or something like that. It's be like some mutual agreement. How's that all worked out? Or how does that all work out?
Yeah, I mean, there's always tricky things with...
They're making it sense to me.
Yeah, there's always weird things with F1 driver contracts and stuff. And I think things that are not released because these guys can be replaced all the time. Sergio Perez has been an interesting, you know, figure with Red Bull. Red Bull notoriously has a very short leash for their drivers. So if you kind of go back, and I don't think none of you guys watched Drive to Survive, right?
No, so negative.
That's kind of Drive to Survive on Netflix has kind of put F1 on the map of the United States. And that was the drama starting Red Bull. Was there was Max Verstappen, who's been on Red Bulls, you know, for a while. But at the time, Max Verstappen was the number two driver back in like 2017, 2018, whatever year it was. And Daniel Ricciardo left at that time, and he was kind of the star of Drive to Survive. He left Red Bull, went to Renault. And since then, the search for the number two behind Verstappen, as he kind of inherited the number one spot on the team, they had a incredibly short leash. So they had Alex Albon, who basically got a half season. They had Pierre Gasly, who was driving that pink car for Alpine you're talking about. He got a half season, and they, you know, kicked them to the curb. And then Sergio Perez was brought in for, you know, in as a free agent that wasn't in the Red Bull program. And he has been fairly successful, and they've won the couple Constructors Championships. But last year, you know, he had a good first half of the year and just struggled. And then this year, you know, he has been nowhere close. He's the only driver off the main four teams that didn't win a race, let alone multiple races, which the other seven in the top have. And I think from a Red Bull standings, you have the exact same car that Max Verstappen has, and he's been a dominant champion. And even the car hasn't been great this year. Sergio Perez can't even get out of his own way in the qualifying. He's generally knocked out in the first round every single weekend. And when you have these type of standards and you have a top four team, there's a lot of expectation. So he's gone. I think it's been the expectation, but who will replace him? The logical two choices are from your junior team, which is the Visa Cash App Racing Bulls. So you have Yuki Tsunoda and Liam Lawson. Rumors are that Lawson's going to get the spot and Yuki Tsunoda will stay with the Racing Bulls team. And then Red Bull, I think he's an F2 driver, but he's in the Red Bull program. It's Isaac Hadjar. He's in Formula 2, I believe. He'd get brought up to replace Lawson's spot in the Visa Red Bull team. So I think Perez, they're probably just negotiating stuff by the teams. I think they want to give him kind of an ambassadorship role or maybe a reserve driver, probably just more ambassador. They'll use somebody else for reserve at this point. But Sergio's really had a rough year and a half.
That sucks. That definitely sucks. Cool. I think that's it, right?
That's it, man. A lot of big weekend. Was it like a 5-day weekend of sports? And we got a lot coming up this weekend, too.
It's a big weekend of sports. Yeah, it was more entertaining than I thought it'd be. It was good. A lot of football. And this is it, man. Playoffs now for college. End of the NFL season. The holidays. It's cool. I dig it. Lines on Thursday.
Thursday lines.
Catch some clips on X and YouTube from Sources from the Sofa podcast. Follow us on Instagram as well. Some of Aaron's rants and takes we'll be updating with some end of the year projections. See how we all went. We're all coming full circle with that. I'm excited. It'll be fun. All right. Peace out, everybody.